It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Nick Whalen, Joe Bartle here with you. It is Wednesday, March 20th, RotoWire Fantasy Football Pod, and we are brought to you by On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days, Joe, of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with a revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create contests in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current in-season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. You can go check out the On Demand DFS app now. Go to your preferred app store, download it, get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. On Demand DFS. Go check it out. Joe, I'm unfamiliar with this. I got to be honest. I didn't know we were mixing in legends to the DFS game, but I'm intrigued.
My Madden skills are set here. I'll be able to have the Charles Woodson and Ray Lewis of the world. Thank you, Madden Ultimate Team, for getting me prepared. Yeah, a great sponsor, and looking forward to partnering with them throughout the offseason.
Yeah, it's always been my dream to, you know, handcuff like Fred Taylor and Tyrone Wheatley together on a fantasy team, and I guess I could do that now with On Demand DFS. All right, let's get into it, man. We're doing this every Wednesday throughout the offseason. We got pro days ongoing right now. Caleb Williams is launching 70-yard deep balls as we speak.
Harrison's doing literally nothing as well.
Harrison's just killing. Kool-Aid McKinstry is, you know, running 4.47 with a broken bone in his foot. So a lot of NFL draft implications still to come here. We're just over a month out from the NFL draft. John and Mario, they'll have you covered on all the draft-related items, and we'll dive into that more as the draft gets closer. But still have some free agency news, Joe, trickling in. And the big one yesterday was, of course, Mike Williams landing with the New York Jets.
Yeah, and we had talked last week he was cut from the Chargers. We had named a number of landing spots. I guess I didn't realize how bad the Jets thought the receiving group was. I understand that Alan Lazard was disappointing and Randall Cobb was Randall Cobb. I'm not just saying as a Packer homer, like I get it that their crew was not good. I didn't think it was as desperately bad relative to what everyone else did. So when Mike Williams signs with them, that seemed like it was the foregone conclusion, especially after the Jets sent him a sandwich or something like that. I'm not sure what the lore behind that deal was, but a breakfast sandwich evidently allured Mike Williams to officially stay in New York. They have a lot of great breakfast sandwiches and places there. So fine. Good flex on them, New York. I'll send my Applebee's when I recruit for the Green Bay Packers and we'll see what's what. But I didn't want to exaggerate with the signing. He's a good player, and a good player going to a team that needs more good players, especially at receiver. There's nothing wrong with that. The money wise, I thought was fine too. You look at other receivers around that same caliber. Darnell Mooney got paid, I think, more than Mike Williams did, and a few of those guys too. Like Kendrick Bourne, we had that listed contract that was of the 3-year, $30 million variety. Wasn't quite that high. Marquise Brown signs for the Chiefs for that. So that Mike Williams goes for a bit more to the Jets. Okay. I just don't think he's that good of a player. And fine, he's going to be a wide receiver two for New York. I need him to be healthy to be a wide receiver two receiver in New York. And great, they improved their offensive line. That to me is a bigger deal. And why, if you're liking the fantasy value for a lot of these guys, and we'll talk about them later on, especially Breece Hall, the John Simpson signing from the Ravens, they traded for Morgan Moses, they signed Tyron Smith. Both the tackles, I'm a little bit concerned with the age part of things. Morgan Moses evidently played with a torn pectoral muscle all of last season or most of last season. But these are the guys on the last end of their career. So fine enough if you're thinking, okay, it'll make a better – it'll make an offensive line that was awful last year, at least average. I think that's kind of the same approach with Mike Williams too. He had that 1,000 – well, it was almost 1,200 yards receiving with the Chargers 2 seasons ago, 9 touchdowns. In the 2 seasons since combined, does not reach that. It was like 1,146 or 1,130 total yards in the past 2 seasons. Has the history of the neck issue, of course, now another knee issue. Kept him out all of this last season. You would think he's going to be healthy, but at 6'4", 220, you hear those numbers, you see those metrics, that's a great red zone threat for sure. Whether it's Phillip Rivers or Justin Herbert or many different coaching iterations for the Chargers, nobody ever thought to use him as a red zone threat. It's not just because Austin Ekeler was so good. I just don't think Mike Williams is that capable. He's been a deep ball specialist and a guy that goes up and gets the jump ball. You've watched Aaron Rodgers a lot, Nick.
I have.
Do you feel like Mike Williams fits what Aaron Rodgers does? Because I don't think so. And there's also that rapport part, which we have known now for a bunch of these young receivers over the Packers' history. Rodgers would be very wary to work with them, and they need to prove themselves. I think the same scenario is going to occur for Mike Williams. So we'll talk about like where his draft value should be and where it was. But people are assuming this is going to raise the floor of the Jets, maybe by default, but I don't think it's going to be significantly higher.
I totally understand this from the Jets perspective, because I think in terms of name value, Mike Williams to me, clearly the best player still available, right? Who else is out there right now?
Tyler Boyd, right? Like, okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Tyler Boyd's been the best number 3 receiver in the league for a while, but I don't know if he's anything better than that. Yeah. He's
had Odell Beckham
ahead of him. Yeah. Odell Beckham signing with the Jets. You could kind of see that, that would feel like a very Odell spot, with everything that's going on with that team. Other than that, you know, it's Hunter Renfrow, which who knows what he is at this point. DJ Chark, Michael Thomas. So I get it. I mean, the idea of what Mike Williams can be at his peak to me is a lot more appealing than those other names. But, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, health is the number one thing with Mike Williams, right? I don't think anybody's ever doubted the talent, and the health issues go all the way back to college, right? And he's had a series of injuries, most of them being serious injuries, including this latest one. Now, you know, they're insisting he's going to be ready for week 1. You know, this injury happened, I think, week 3. So that seems conceivable. His best fantasy season of his career, Joe, is 2021, when he finished as the wide receiver 12. So I think that's kind of the, I guess if you want to say the ceiling, that was, you know, about 1,150 yards, 9 touchdowns in 2021 at age 26. That was kind of as the, you know, the co-number one, number two next to Keenan Allen, as was the situation throughout his whole tenure with the Chargers. I mean, he's clearly behind Garrett Wilson with the Jets. Obviously, this all hinges on Aaron Rodgers staying healthy, which, of course, did not happen last season. But, you know, with Mike Williams, I think something that does go a little undercovered with him is that the injuries have kind of been made. They've either been like major injuries or he's playing. Like he's had a lot of 15, 16 game seasons throughout his career. So if you want to say, all right, he had the major injury last year, I think he bounces back. I'm on board with that thinking, but I think you're right. You think of Aaron Rodgers as, one of the great deep ball throwers. Like, yeah, at his peak, that was totally true. It just wasn't really a part of his game those last couple of years in Green Bay. And maybe he would tell you, hey, it's because I didn't have somebody like Mike Williams, but I'm approaching this with some degree of caution. I like the talent grab by the Jets, but
not a jump ball, deep ball thrower, right? Like I think of Phillip Rivers famously just kind of up. It's like Kyler Murray throwing to DeAndre Hopkins. He's somewhere over there. Rodgers would have precision on his throws. He has the timing with Jordy Nelson and Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and Davante Adams. Like that's, you don't get that over a, let's say conservatively, a 2-month period. Although now that he's not vice president for a potential president incumbent, maybe Rodgers will have more time to work with Mike Williams. Who knows? I'm saying that just because I just don't feel like at this stage of Rodgers' career, he's taking the effort to get these new guys more involved and to find out what Aaron Rodgers needs. So fine, Mike Williams is a great deep ball specialist. Is your quarterback throwing the deep ball, jump ball? No, I just don't think that's happening this year.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think if you want to take the optimistic view, you know, one way to do that would be, you know, yeah, Aaron Rodgers isn't, he's not airing it out. He's not putting up the yardage totals. He's not throwing up these jump balls like he was perhaps earlier in his career. But if you want to go back to the end of his Packers tenure, this was a team that loved to throw the ball on the goal line. And, oh, yeah. You know, how much of that was Aaron Rodgers just, you know, kind of doing his own thing versus just pounding it in with A.J. Dillon, or probably failing to do that with A.J. Dillon, or trying to do it with Aaron Jones. He's somebody who likes to pad his touchdown numbers. And I think that's a pretty big leap to make when you're talking fantasy. It's like, there's no real way to bake in, like, all right, how many times are they going to throw it from first and goal on the two as opposed to run it? I don't know. There's no way to project this. Completely different coaching staff, different situation. But I think there is, you know, there's some touchdown upside here for Mike Williams as opposed to yardage upside. But I don't think it's realistic to say, well, you know, a few years ago, he was the wide receiver 12. I don't think he's getting back to that. Not as the number two in this offense, which I think projects to be relatively balanced. Like we said, Rodgers is not a high yardage guy. I don't think that necessarily changes this season, even if he stays healthy. You're playing behind a high volume target monster in Garrett Wilson. And, you know, this is still a team that has a great running back and wants to be as balanced as it can with Breece Hall. So I get it. I think the upside to me is, like, best case scenario, Mike Williams is what, like wide receiver 20? Yeah, I think the other thing is the wide receiver pool is deeper than it was even 2 years ago, right? We got this great class coming in. Other guys have emerged. Like, it's tougher to be the wide receiver 12 or 15 now than it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, we'll get to it because I did a bunch of best balls over the weekend, but I was really curious to see what the Mike Williams news would do. And of course, we're doing this a week before Easter, so I understand that end of August drafts are going to be significantly different from Mike Williams. You said best case scenario is wide receiver 20. Well, he's not being even drafted as like wide receiver 30 or 40 right now. Prior to the signing, so end of last week, it was round 13 on Underdog best balls that I'm seeing. Best balls, of course, different strategy. You could say maybe there's a round variance to it. When I did my latest one, this was the signing that was announced for Mike Williams. He was a 10th round selection during the weekend when it was rumored that he was going to be going to New York. It was around 11th round selection. So there was a market jump a little bit. And I assume as the offseason progresses, and we'll see more news regarding Mike Williams and, oh man, look at the chemistry he's got with Aaron Rodgers, even though it's been a week. You're going to see all those tweets. Fine. Might be more like a 7th, 8th round, 9th round, and he has more name value. But the guys that were taken before Mike Williams yesterday when I did one of the mock draft. So Donnie Mitchell, a really good rookie that I think could be a first-round talent. Troy Franklin, think like better Tyquan Thornton, at least that's my mind. Ladd McConkey, I'm a huge opponent, a huge proponent for Mario and John, who have been all in on Ladd McConkey now for a while. Cortland Sutton, Jacoby Myers, Josh Downs, Xavier Worthy. All those guys were taken before Mike Williams, and this was when the latest draft happened. I don't know, like receivers taken after Mike Williams, Rashid Shaheed, Keon Coleman, Jerry Jeudy, Gabe Davis, Tyler Lockett, Jahan Dotson. I like a lot of those guys even taken after. Round 10 already to me is too early. Again, we're doing this before Easter, but that's I think wide receiver 35, if you get that as a Jets fan, you're happy. But I don't think it matters from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, on average right now, he's going as wide receiver 48. I would expect that to rise a little bit. I think there's going to be some just general excitement, you know. Oh, Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets. You know, like his ADP is not going to fall. But the best ball that I'm in right now, we just finished up the 8th round. Still on the board there. You know, the last handful of receivers who came off the board, you know, were DeAndre Hopkins, Deontay Johnson, Brian Thomas, the rookie out of LSU, JSN, Christian Watson, and Romeo Doubs. So all those guys still going ahead of Mike Williams. Just one isolated draft, but something to keep an eye on. And we'll talk more about best balls. I know you were firing off a bunch of those in the last week, so we'll talk about that a bit later. You know, we're kind of hard up for free agency news because we had such an avalanche over the last week or so. But we did get one relatively minor, but, you know, still meaningful signing earlier today. Deontay Foreman inking a deal with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I actually think this matters a little bit more than people are going to assume. And again, we're doing this when we're all excited for March Madness. The NBA playoffs are coming. NHL playoffs are coming. This is, if there is a lull in the NFL offseason, it would be right now, because in 2 weeks' time, you have all the pro days more or less come in. Now it's the gearing up for the NFL draft. Teams will be trading for all those bad quarterbacks in the beginning of first round. I'm joking, kind of, but there's going to be a lot of excitement. But this time right now isn't as interesting. So the Browns signing Deontay Foreman, given what Foreman has done the past 2 years with different teams, the Titans and Bears, as that bludgeoning running back, the guy that can assume more carries if the starter gets injured, to me that says Nick Chubb is going to be gone. Whether they cut him or they restructure the contract, that's an ideal scenario. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do outright release Nick Chubb given the Jerry Jeudy extension this past weekend as well. We know the Browns are a little bit cash strapped, or at least I would have thought so prior to that Jeudy signing. I think the Browns might choose to do the Foreman Jerome Ford route, assuming Nick Chubb can't get back healthy from this another really crippling knee injury. And that's another one in the market. So I'm looking, especially from the best ball perspective, I was trying to find some of these later round running backs. What backfields are open right now, or at least have some spots? So the Chargers, Gus Edwards, and then what, Isaiah Spiller? That's about it. I have followed the Chargers intimately. Isaiah Spiller is not very good. So to me, it's just Gus Edwards, nobody else. The Chiefs have Isaiah Pacheco, and then nobody else. They signed Keontae Ingram, that former fifth-round pick from the Cardinals a couple of years ago. I would assume Pacheco's the guy. They're going to get somebody, whether they re-sign Edwards-Helaire or McKinnon, fine. The Cowboys have nobody, right? I mean, like, if you're saying Nick Chubb gets cut, where does he go? The Cowboys are on the phone tonight saying, I'll sign you to a one-year, $10 million deal right away, and they'll still go ahead and draft another person. But right now, Rico Dowdle is the only person really on their roster that would be starting running back. That will change. Devin Singletary with the Giants, then they don't have a lot of Breece Hall. I'd assume the Jets will draft at least one running back, but they could sign another person as well to the Rams. I've been saying now for a while, it's Kyren Williams and nothing else. They haven't had any inkling to get one of those dudes, but it has to change. And then Vikings with Aaron Jones and Ty Chandler, and then nothing else. So there's six or seven that have backup spots. And with this rookie class, you could say maybe three would fill that void. There are going to be veterans that have a fantasy prominent role on a few of these teams, not to mention whatever happens in Dallas. So I turn to you. We had the list of guys up on RotoWire right now of available free agents. So it's like Ezekiel Elliott, J.K. Dobbins, Rashad Penny, Royce Freeman, Delvin Cook, CEH, Edwards-Helaire, Jerick McKinnon. Which one of those guys would you want to roll a last two or three roster spot in best ball? Because right now, everyone is either undrafted or like Ezekiel Elliott in the 19th round.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pick of the litter here of just, you know, huge names that I'm excited to land. You know, Jerick McKinnon's always a favorite of mine in best ball. You know, obviously when he was with the Chiefs, you know, you just felt like there was a bit more upside there as kind of the pass catching specialist. And I do wonder if there's still a path to him, you know, potentially returning to Kansas City if they are a team that doesn't address that in the draft or in free agency. I mean, J.K. Dobbins still has the name value. It's just the injuries, you know, obviously have added up for him. And you just kind of feel like that next one's around the corner. What does he look like coming off of the latest injury? I think I'm done with Zeke. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if this is kind of the end of his career at this point. I actually thought he performed pretty well in a terrible situation.
So why are you done with Zeke, given what you just said there?
I think there was relatively limited interest in him last season. I think it says a lot that given all of the running back signings that we've had, he still remains on the board. And I know there are landing spots. That's the thing, right? You just named off like seven teams who still have needs here, but are these teams waiting for the draft? Are they waiting to see how that shakes out? Is he somebody that signs later in the summer? I guess could Zeke return to Dallas? I don't know. Does that get you excited? It's just like, it's not like somebody's bringing in Zeke to be anything close to a starting running back. And I know there are teams out there again that have these needs, but I think, you know, it's going to get incrementally worse for Zeke as he gets later into his career. And yeah, it turned out okay last year in New England, but is he going to a situation where you're legitimately excited or, you know, feeling that this is going to be profitable to have him on a fantasy roster? I think his name value, and this has been the case for a couple of years now, I think his name value exceeds the player that he ultimately is at this point in his career.
I think his name value gets him signed somewhere. I think Delvin Cook, same thing, gets signed somewhere off the name value. I have been low on Zeke now for the past two or three years. And I know other RotoWire contingency have not been. I've been fading Zeke really dating back to the Dallas days towards the end of it. And certainly last year as well, too. I was impressed with what he was able to do in a really, really bad offense in New England. And Ramondre Stevenson still getting some of the workload as well, too, that Zeke was a profiled pass blocker, pass catcher, can still run inside. Those are traits that I think a lot of teams, and again, rattled off all those. I'm sure there's probably one or two more that view their depth chart needing some sort of option, maybe a veteran presence. Those are traits that teams want to have. So if I'm saying I'm going to throw a lottery ticket on somebody, sure, none of these options, again, that we list are very valuable. Zeke's the one that profiles in my mind as an obvious going to get signed, will play for a team, and will have a role, whether it be as a three-down specialist, not as a pass catcher. It's not like Jerick McKinnon, but the blocking part of things as a leader, mentor, whatever else you might have. I think he's actually tremendous value for around 18 or 19. I'm operating under the assumption, given most of the draft community has said, this running back class is awful. So if you say seven of these teams that have very obvious needs, at least for number two, if not more, three or four are going to draft guys in round two, three, or four, then there are at least three teams that are going to consider an Ezekiel Elliott, a Dalvin Cook, or somebody of that ilk. And I would buy low on Dobbins personally. That if I'm running a team, I want the younger player, the one that had bursts when he was healthy, and hoping my medical staff can do something different. But I think most teams are going to operate that they want a person with traits, and whether it be leadership or whatever else, Zeke matches that for me. So I've been drafting, I think, around 18 or later every time, because I think by default among this list, he is going to sign in a prominent enough spot that he should be higher than around 18 pick.
So I want to preface this by saying, relatively speaking, Rashad Penny is at least somewhat interesting to
me. That's a good one, too.
Well, he's going as an RB96. Like, he's, you know, basically going undrafted in the vast majority of best balls, and perhaps for good reason. I was kind of talking myself into Rashad Penny last year. It's like, all right, you know, he's in this, he should be a really productive running offense. Like, maybe they lessen the workload and he stays healthy. They just didn't use him, dude. They didn't use him. 11 carries the entire year. I mean, it's kind of a lost season for him, but it's also a season where you're not piling up, you know, any carries, any workload, any durability issues. Like, he, to me, you know, he's going to be 28 next season. And again, should be coming in fresh after barely doing anything in 2023. So like, I could see myself getting suckered back in on Rashad Penny, you know, if he signs as an obvious RB2 somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, the Cowboys had signed Ronald Jones last year in part that maybe he competes for a number two role behind Tony Pollard. That never happened, but you could easily project Rashad Penny to do the same thing with whoever running back is drafted by the Cowboys, or if they trade or sign Nick Chubb, if that cut were to occur. I mean, like, that's the one that could easily take the three down workload. Obviously the J.K. Dobbins health concerns are more present, but Rashad Penny has similar things. I think Penny at this point has proved as much, if not more, than Dobbins, which is to say neither have done a whole lot. It's a barren group, and so I go back to Ezekiel Elliott as the clear-cut, obvious one for me. I thought there was stuff left for an NFL team to use. Does that mean he gets fantasy value because the NFL team uses him? No. But like Dalvin Cook, I don't think there's anything left. Like, he didn't show me anything in his stints last season. Ezekiel Elliott did. So if I'm picking one of these vagabond running backs that are still left in the fridge and wire to do something, it's Zeke before anybody else.
All right, let's talk some best ball, Ben. It's so fun to do these this time of year. I always play on Underdog. I know you've been doing some best balls as well. Mario and John, who are on this pod, they're deep into that. For me, I don't look at this necessarily as like, all right, I'm going to make some serious money here. I just love going through the drafts, doing the exercises, seeing where players are going, especially with all this movement. The last couple of weeks, it's been really fun and really revealing, I think, to see where certain guys go in light of their landing spots. So I know you, like I said, you did a few of these over the last week. Do you already have some pet players, you know, guys you've been taking in a few drafts?
Yeah, unfortunately. So I want to preface, I want to try to have five done by the end of our podcast last week. That was when I decided to, because we had been talking about Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry. Now I'm like, no, I think they're late second round, early third round guys at minimum. I want to have them there. And I wanted to see what the idea was from other people. I ended up not doing five, I did four. Of my four drafts, I had either the 10th or 11th pick. Can I just plead to like the underdog gods or whoever decides this? Can we have some bad luck insurance where I don't always have to get stuck in the crappy draft spots? I can already tell you, Nick, it's going to be this kind of year. I do 15 redraft leagues every single season. If I have another 75% where I'm taking picks 10 and later, I'm going to just go crazy. I need to not have this sort of bad luck. There is a very clear, I think, top seven tier. The top seven overall pick tier.
Well, give me those players, because I think that's debatable. So where's the drop off for you?
To me, it's the Tyreek Hill. So like Bijan Robinson, Breece Hall has been falling there too. So Breece Hall, Tyreek Hill, Bijan Robinson is the end of my tier one. Like I know there's the Christian McCaffrey love at number one. I understand that. You can go the Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase route at receiver, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra St. Brown. All those guys make complete sense to me. I don't really know if I have a preference yet as to who I would take if I had 1-1 overall. But I know I want to end with a Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, or Tyreek Hill of that group. After that, though, I see no difference between 1-8, 1-9, and like 2-14 or 2. So I've been taking Drake London as one of my back end of the second round picks about a round ahead of his ADP, because I actually got one pick in the fifth round or fifth overall, and I got him in the third round because that. But I don't want to lose out on Drake London right now. Like, if you're projecting which receiver is going to take the biggest leap this season, you're assuming that the Achilles injury for Kirk Cousins is healed. I mean, this is, I'm worried about for Aaron Rodgers, who's significantly older and behind a lesser offensive line, but it's fair to also be concerned about Kirk Cousins. But just assuming Kirk Cousins is healthy, they have a non-football terrorist actually calling plays and doing stuff with Raheem Morris, Morris and the rest of the coaching staff for the Falcons. That offense has to be better. By default, it has to be better. Would it be Drake London, Bijan Robinson, maybe even Kyle Pitts? I'm not ready to quite buy into that yet because I've burned so many times. But those guys have to be better. So Drake London, to me, who's already a 1,000-yard receiver, even in the worst circumstances possible, now gets to be the number one target in an offense that's way better, a defense that's improved, a division that stinks, got way worse this offseason. I think Drake London should be a late first-round pick. I don't know if that happens by the end of August, but I'm going to end up having like 90% shares where his current ADP is, which is like mid-third, early third round at the moment. And I was taking him back into the first, early second, and I will take him every single time I get that opportunity.
So since Best Ball launched, which I believe is right around the Super Bowl, his ADP is 45. And we're seeing, like you said, on average, at least a 15-pick jump, if not more. He went at 25, first pick of the third round in the Best Ball that I'm currently doing right now.
That was mine too.
I don't know if he can make it to the end of the first round, man. That's just like the amount of names that you have to pass up, right? I mean, he would have to pass up Stephon Diggs, Davante Adams, Marvin Harrison, Brandon Ayuk, Rashee Rice, DJ Moore.
And every one of those, I'm taking Drake London over. Every single one of those.
I'd rather have him than DJ Moore. I think I'll say that.
I'm taking him over Stephon Diggs, that's for sure, after the Joe Brady experience of the second half. Davante Adams in what's going to be a worse quarterback situation than last year. I know Davante did better, and I love Davante. I think he's going to be a serviceable top 24, top 30 pick overall, even if it's Gardner Minshew or elsewhere throwing. Drake London's upside is on par with what we saw with Puka Nacua, with Nico Collins, AJ Brown, and those are all late first. I'm taking Drake London over all of them. The only exception is Garrett Wilson, who, again, if I'm assuming Kirk Cousins is going to stay healthy, I should probably do it for Aaron Rodgers. That's the only distinction in my mind. Like, Nico was great. CJ Stroud's awesome. That was probably the quarterback I was drafting most if I was taking one early in the round 5-6 range. I really believe that Drake London is on par with the AJ Browns, Puka Nacua's, Nico Collins of the world, and I'll gladly take him in that same spot.
What about London versus Rashee Rice? I think that's an interesting one.
I'm taking London as well, too. So the idea is the Chiefs offense doesn't need to have one player function to make it better. Now, I know Travis Kelce did at times. Rashee Rice was carrying the offense, but now signing Marquise Brown, I still think the Chiefs should and could get Hunter Renfrow as well, not affecting their compensatory picks that they should be getting. Whatever happens with the Jerry Sneed as well. Like there's money that could be freed up. And if they want to go ahead and get a guy like Hunter Renfrow, I think would fit really well for the Chiefs. But they can scheme guys open every single week. Like there are times where Justin Watson has fantasy value just because Andy Reid decided he was going to have fantasy value. Whereas I believe in Atlanta, it's going to be Bijan, it's going to be Drake London and Kyle Pitts and the Darnell Mooneys and Rondale Moore's the world. They're secondary pieces to an offense that I think it's close to 5,000 yards passing. That's where Drake London has the exceptional value in my mind.
So I'll tell you the two receivers who I've drafted most frequently so far in best ball has been Nico Collins, who I just absolutely love. I want pieces of that Texans offense. I think they're on the ascent. I don't see there being, you know, some sort of second year comeback to earth situation here for CJ Stroud. I think that's an offense that's going to erupt. And the other is T. Higgins, who I've been consistently getting in the fourth round. And I know T. Higgins is, I guess, requested a trade. The Bengals have remained pretty quiet on that front. They're not really under any obligation to do that. So I think there's, you know, one world in which they just say, too bad, man, sorry. And, you know, he's playing a game with Joe Burrow and should be healthier this year. Burned me last year. I'm running right back into the burning building. I don't care. The other world is that he is traded and he's probably a number one somewhere else. Maybe it's with
an inferior. Like Carolina.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, there's a doomsday scenario where he ends up with a terrible team and a bad quarterback. And that's certainly a risk, but I think it's more likely that Cincinnati holds on to him. And again, if he is traded, you know, maybe he does end up somewhere, probably not with a better quarterback, but you're just hoping for the non-disaster scenario. But I think, you know, being able to get T. Higgins with like the 45th pick right now in a best ball, I'm totally fine running back in on him.
Yeah, the injury concerns have me a bit worried. And overall, so we're talking like fourth round for T. Higgins, maybe a little bit earlier. Yep. It was that fifth or sixth round that I just hated. every single one of the best balls, I'm like, God, do I have to take somebody here? This is not really working. So I want to have an answer next time I do a best ball, what my plan is in round 5 and 6, because that actually dictates what I'll do in the earlier rounds. That's how bad that round section is, that you have to kind of strategize, I think, at that point. That's a discussion for a later period, because there's draft strategy things overall, which I like to do, but isn't always super enticing. Higgins is fine enough with the idea that you're saying best case scenario we've seen in a couple of years now. Joe Burrow, excellent quarterback. Bengals, once again, once Burrow's healthy, should be among the top teams in the AFC in that division. Sorry, conference is still super loaded. Ja'Marr Chase takes away certain levels of coverage that teams can't dictate. So Higgins is kind of like a walking 1,100 and 6 or 7 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. You're right. I don't think he gets traded. I had not thought he was going to get traded all offseason, and that his camp requested a trade to me is like, okay, great. So you really have no leverage, right? Like you kind of use that trade card or that trap card already. But we saw AJ Brown get dealt during the NFL draft for Treylon Burks, right? I mean, like if the board plays out a certain way, the Bengals might be a little bit proactive with it. The only issue is the teams that'd be acquiring him are teams I just would not want Teagans to go to, like Carolina. There's going to be 5 or 6 bad offenses. I'll throw the Giants into that equation too. 5 or 6 bad offenses next year that are going to be like morbidly bad. We can't comprehend how bad they're going to be, no matter if it's the Vikings trading for Drake May or whatever else, or the Broncos drafting their QB du jour of choice for Sean Payton. Like, there are 5 or 6 teams that have just said, no, actually, what if we don't do this offensive thing and just try to like build with our crap players? I'm worried about the scenario where Teagans goes there, and that's just enough for me to move off from his current ADP.
That does worry me for sure, because I agree. There are some teams you just don't want a piece of. How much has that impacted the way you view the top rookie receivers when you're going through a best ball? You know, someone like Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers specifically, you know, guys who could end up, you know, I don't know, with the New York Giants or with the Tennessee Titans or, you know, something like that. Like, how much does that really factor in versus the obvious talent?
Yeah, so this is why I've been enjoying doing the best balls at this period, because we're getting them before the NFL draft, before we have a lot of information. And I believe my talent evaluation and that of the people I trust is going to be better than most people out there. So I have an advantage just identifying some of these rookies and to a lesser extent, running backs as well, too. The most egregious examples of overdrafting, I thought, were Devon Achane, who was like a late first round, early second round pick. What are we doing with that? And then Marvin Harrison at like 17 or 18 when Drake London is still going after. I love Marvin Harrison just as much as the next person. You're not going to get any prospect fatigue stuff from me. Like, he's one of the best receiver prospects we've had in a long time. And because Marvin Harrison is doing nothing either at the combine or at the pro day, it's made guys like Nabers and Adunze get more traction and more steam. Yeah. So now you're seeing, oh, Nabers should go as the first receiver. Stop it. Come on. Just like, Nabers is good. He's not.
Well, we're seeing the same thing with Caleb Williams too, right?
I know. And he paints his fingernails, so we all hate Caleb Williams for that and whatever else.
It's fatigue of being the number one guy. This happens in every sport. It happens in just about every draft, you know, where there's a very clear number one prospect. When that guy, especially in Harrison and Williams' case, where we've been hearing about them for, you know, a year before they're even draft eligible, there's just, you know, when you basically can't say anything positive because it's all been said over the course of 2 years, I think, you know, there's just always going to be not necessarily detractors, but just people looking for a reason to be different, right? And I get that.
Right.
You know, the Harrison thing is interesting because you do hear smart draft evaluators say, yeah, he's by far the safest guy if you're just looking for somebody who could become a borderline all pro for the next 10 years. But you can make the case that, yeah, maybe Nabers has a higher ceiling or Adunze has a higher ceiling. I get that. But I think we've been talking about it for too long. I know.
What's a higher ceiling than an all pro over the next 10 years? Like, that's the safety net for Marvin Harrison.
I know. I heard that on a pod the past week, and like, it was said as a negative. That it's like, well, you know, he might only be a pro bowler every year. I was like,
oh, darn. Like, so this receiver class is going to all time is used so often so poorly. This is going to be an all time bad running back class. Like, I feel pretty certain, at least of the past decade or so. The receiver class is really, really good and super, super top heavy. And when I say top heavy, I'm not saying top 6 in the first round. I'm saying like among the first 64 picks, we might have 10 receivers or pass catchers throwing a broad. Like 1/6 of the top 2 rounds are going to go to pass catchers. And it's not because teams need them per se. It's because they're just really, really good players that you want on your team. So great, whether it be Harrison or Nabers or Dunze, I am like I will admit my faults when it comes to scouting out rookies. I fall into archetypes for receivers far too often. Like, what's the easiest thing to project? Well, a big receiver can go ahead and box out, especially if he's shown that capability to go get a ball. Therefore, that guy is going to be a better number one receiver. Rashee Rice, for example, last year, I was probably higher on him the most to begin. And I wrote the article on the day two selections. And I was like, I think Rice is easily top seven overall in rookie redrafts because his route running is so precise and he has a defined role in the offense. I would assume that if you're drafting Odunze, if you're drafting Neighbors, if you're drafting Harrison, you already have a defined role in the offense, whether it be with New York, whether it be with Arizona, with the Cardinals and Marvin Harrison, whatever else. So I'm not scared off by those things. And I've also been a proponent that even bad teams that have good receivers can force feed that good receiver enough where he's fantasy relevant. I think back to Drake London's rookie year when he was a fifth, sixth, seventh round pick and got over 1,000 receiving yards and the Falcons sucked. They were really, really bad. And they had football terrorist Arthur Smith calling plays. So I'm okay with the rookies to a certain point. I just know what I'm getting with some of these veterans. And if Odunze and Neighbors are getting drafted or ahead of some of the more obvious places that I can project, I'm not going that direction until I know more information.
All right, let's talk about the end of drafts, or maybe more so the late middle zone. You have a list of guys I know, who are going round 10 or later, who you really like at ADP.
Yeah, so I again, four drafts, was shooting for five, but there was some roster builds for the most part. I'm shooting for three quarterbacks, especially without knowing bye weeks in underdog, and I wanted to have six or seven running backs, six or seven receivers, and then you sort of combine the tight ends. Like I have one Sam Laporta share, so I'm only getting two, right? Those are obvious sort of strategy deals. I like Josh Palmer and his ADP currently, which is ADP 152, wide receiver 68. They trade away Keenan Allen, Chargers did. Obviously, Mike Williams released. We just talked about that. Right now, the number one receiver for Los Angeles is Josh Palmer. And then first round pick last year, Quentin Johnston. I liked Johnston. That was one of those archetype failures because I was like, hey, this big receiver, good run blocker. Therefore, he's going to play. He should be fine. He was not. He was pretty miserable. I think back to the Packer game. Probably should have had a game-winning touchdown, just went through his hands. That was
probably, yes.
That was his entire season for like 16 weeks. Towards the final two, 3 weeks, you got a bit of a turnaround, that Patriots game, that 6-3 laugher. Quentin Johnston actually did good enough where I'm like, oh, there might be some redeemable qualities. I said Arthur Smith is football terrorist. That's true. So is Greg Roman, though, and that Jim Harbaugh has decided to bring him on with Justin Herbert. It hinders the Chargers offense as a whole, but people are way too negative. Even if the Chargers were to draft one, if not two receivers, which they could, Palmer is going to be a starting receiver for that team and has the most chemistry with Justin Herbert. Two seasons now of clear and obvious target shares, even when Keenan Allen was healthy, even Mike Williams is there. Like, I think Josh Palmer is going to be the safest receiver and kind of like the Romeo Doubs from the past 2 years where you're like, hey, one guy by default has to do better than where his ADP is. If you think Herbert's going to be quarterback 13, 14, 15, to me, it's Josh Palmer. And I don't even think it's close. That's one of my favorite values, certainly past the round 10 mark.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I mean, I think it's, you kind of look at it and you're like, well, I mean, he is the number one receiver. He still has Justin Herbert. They will add some sort of help, but what quality of help are we talking at this point? And, even if they were to either take, kind of stand pat where they are right now, and take a receiver or trade down and take one later in the first round, you're not looking at an overwhelming, like, oh, he can't overcome this situation. He's still probably pretty easily the number two guy to begin the year. So I like that. I've done the same. I've grabbed Gus Edwards, the Chargers starting running back, I guess, late in a bunch of drafts, got him at like pick 180 and one, grabbed Rico Dowdle, who we talked about earlier as well. Just kind of these guys who are penciled in right now as starters. We know this team is going to add help in some form or fashion, but like you said, what running back are you going to draft where you're like, oh man, there go my Rico Dowdle shares who I got with 188th pick, right? It's like you'll bring in somebody to compete, obviously, whether it's one of these free agents who we obviously don't feel that great about, or this, somebody out of this underwhelming running back class. I'm not saying Rico Dowdle is going to carry the ball 300 times. There's going to be someone there, but I don't see it being a situation where, 4 or 5 months from now, we look back and say, oh my goodness, I can't believe Rico Dowdle was going to have a role in this backfield. Like, he's going to. And I think Gus Edwards is going to have the same in LA.
Yeah, I completely agree with Gus Edwards. He was, I think I drafted in two of my four. I was getting him in like round 12. I don't know what that ADP ends up being, but as my running back 3 or 4. And it doesn't matter if the Chargers add somebody, they probably will. that's an archetype, again, that I think Jim Harbaugh is going to love, the way they want to run the offense, especially with Greg Roman, who knows what Gus Edwards is capable of doing. To me, it makes complete sense. I'll leave a lot of the prospect stuff to John and Mario, who do a lot of the Thursday shows. But I will just mention, along the same veins as what you're discussing with running backs, I did a tight end, and I had said, okay, if I didn't get Sam Laporta, often I was going for the David Njoku's of the world or someone of that ilk, like around 7, 8, 9 sort of dudes. So Kyle Pitts was in one of the equations. And my idea was, I'm going to get a Jonnu Smith or Mike Gesicki, who are going to get some pass catching work on new teams, and we haven't quite valued it. Jatavion Sanders is pretty clear cut number two tight end of this rookie class. It's Brock Bowers and then like nobody else, but Sanders is next in my mind. And along the same vein of, well, here are the running back depth charts and teams that need guys. There's a decent amount of tight end ones too. It's not like last year where clearly the Packers need one and clearly the Lions need one. And you could go down the list and, oh, but then there's like four guys from rookies that were relevant. But Commanders, who have Zach Ertz and nothing else, Zach Ertz might not be alive at that point. He's going to be alive, I hope. But certainly too old to be like a competent fantasy asset. I got to be careful with my jokes here. Greg Dulcich with the Broncos. Sean Payton clearly didn't like him toward the end of last year. The Chargers signed Will Disley to be a blocking specialist. In fact, that was part of the tweet that came out. So that doesn't indicate to me receiving specialist. So there's a guy that they could sign as well or draft. The Colts, I think, are going to get Brock Bowers at pick 15. But if they don't, it's Kylan Granson and a bunch of other mush. Panthers, Tommy Tremble. Rams, Tyler Higbee, who might not even be back healthy. That's six teams that easily need a number one tight end. And if you draft Sanders in the mid-second round, you're getting a number one tight end. Nearly 200. Like, that's around 17, 16 range to get a tight end one for a team who's young, athletic, and explosive receiver. Like, I think Jatavion Sanders needs to be way higher just off the basis alone that he's going to replace one of these team starters.
All right, we'll end on this, Joe. We got to talk Marquise Brown. I think this broke after we spoke last week. So I'm looking at just three best balls that I have pulled up here on Underdog. A couple of these were like somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks ago, and then one is active right now. He went 112, 87, and now in the draft that is ongoing that started a couple nights ago, 64th overall.
That's a little higher than maybe I want to go, but I like the premise.
I kind of like it. You were talking earlier about that. There is a cliff when it comes to wide receivers. I think for me, it tends to be end of the fourth round, maybe into the fifth now, where you get like Waddle, Metcalf, Higgins, Devontae, Jaden Reed, Amari Cooper, and Adunze went 50 in the one I'm looking at. Then it was Zay Flowers, Pickens, Keenan Allen, Christian Kirk. After that is where I get a little uncomfortable. You know, we'll kind of see where Calvin Ridley settles over the next few weeks.
But I have a lot of Ridley right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, and well, you know, I mean, it's the Tennessee Titans, so approach that with the appropriate degree of risk. But I just want to get your take on, you know, we knew there was going to be a boost for Marquise Brown. Is 30 to 40 picks the right amount?
Yeah, and so in relation to the Ridley thing, I was deciding between Ridley and Marquise Brown for a lot of the drafts that I was doing over the weekend. When we had the news of Marquise Brown signing with the Chiefs and Ridley signing with the Titans, the replay of all the touchdowns dropped or near touchdowns for Trevor Lawrence last year, I know you're intimately familiar with that tweet with Jacksonville. That was running in my head with the Calvin Ridley stuff. Like, he was clearly a really good receiver, and a lot of bad breaks just tend to happen for Jacksonville. Sorry for you, a long-suffering fan. And it was very clearly evident at times for last year with that connection. So I don't think Calvin Ridley lost a step, and that he's going to be the clear number one in an offense that by default has to pass more. I was taking Calvin Ridley over Marquise Brown. For no other reason than the team will try to justify signing him to the level they did just by default. But if you're saying at minimum Marquise Brown will do MVS stuff, well, he's like a 3 times better receiver than MVS is. And MVS was a deep threat specialist who still got like 600 yards over the course of a season because Mahomes is brilliant. Like, I like the concept, absolutely. And I think it unlocks an element to that offense that they did not have for much of last year. Like, Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce propelled that Super Bowl run. Not having a speed threat to make it easier for them was really a clear misstep from a roster build construction standpoint. And that they're improving the MVS role with Marquise Brown is great. I just get concerned the Chiefs can make anybody look good on any given week. That, are you sure? Are you going to be targeting Marquise Brown to the extent that you would at Adunze or my case, Kelvin Ridley. No is the answer. That's not the way Andy Reid chooses to do things. And unless you're named Travis Kelce or dating Taylor Swift, you don't get those opportunities either for Kansas City's offense. I get a little bit concerned with that. Best ball is different though, right? Like you're getting the best case scenarios for Marquise Brown. Great. Love that idea. But I'm thinking a 30 pick difference. That's a little bit egregious, even if he went to probably the best case scenario he could have.
Yeah. For some context, he went right between Chris Godwin and Calvin Ridley
I'm taking Godwin underdog. As well.
Okay.
Who are the guys after that range?
DeAndre Hopkins, Deontay Johnson, Brian Thomas, JSN, Christian Watson.
So I liked the Christian Watson play. That was one of the receivers that was round 7-8. Best ball only. That you're like, hey, you know, on the best case scenarios, that guy can be a starting player in your lineup. But yeah, I guess after Chris Godwin, after Calvin Ridley, I would take Marquise Brown there. So maybe I just talked myself out. 30 picks is fine, Nick. That's a great jump up. Because the upside is certainly present. I think Christian Watson should be a little bit higher as well, too. If for no other reason than the Packers changed their entire medical staff. Theoretically, it can't be much worse for Christian Watson and his hamstrings. But yeah, Marquise Brown in that range, maybe a little bit lower for me, but certainly in that range.
All right. We love it, man. Joe, good stuff, man. Love doing this pod with you every Wednesday. We'll continue to do that throughout the NFL offseason, of course, leading up to the draft in a little over a month. We want to thank our sponsor, On Demand DFS. Make sure you go check them out. I talked about it early in the show. So if you want to hear the full spiel, just rewind to the beginning, but go check out On Demand DFS. You can find their app in the Google Play Store or, of course, in the Apple App Store as well. Joe, enjoy the rest of the week, man. Big March Madness weekend coming up. I know you ordered pizza for the whole office. Looking forward to it, dude.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this. Looking forward to next week as well, too.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.